You're listening to Asia First Weekend Edition. Me, Justine Moss. A very good morning to you. Crossing now to our US Bureau Chief in Washington, D.C., Simon Marks. Hi, Simon.
Hello, Justine.
Thanks so much for joining us here once again. Just want to start off with the final presidential debate yesterday, of course. More civilized in a way, but no less contentious. A lot of, you know, trading of barbs and criticisms, of course. No surprises there. Both camps claiming victory. Let's talk about some key takeaways from that debate.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose the biggest takeaway and the biggest surprise was the fact that it was such a different affair than the first television debate last month. I mean, I certainly was not necessarily expecting the relative calm that descended on the auditorium. I think that's due to several different factors. I mean, first of all, I suspect that the candidates were both spoken to by their respective campaign managers and warned that a repetition of the kind of behavior that we witnessed during that first television debate was not going to be appreciated by the public. I mean, secondly, it may well be that the mere presence of the mute button, even though it was only deployed during their opening two-minute statements on each of the six segments of discussion, it may be that the presence of that mute button simply changed the atmosphere and the sense that they both had going into this debate. I think we've also got to say that the moderator, Kristen Welker of NBC, did a phenomenal job and clearly should be a candidate for hosting all of these presidential debates going forward for election cycles to come. I mean, at the end of the day, the debate, I think, will be remembered for a handful of things. Joe Biden, right at the start, saying, if you listen to nothing else, listen to me now when I tell you that a man who has the deaths of more than 220,000 Americans on his hands due to his handling of COVID-19 has no right to expect four more years in the White House. I mean, that was a pretty clarion start to the debate by Joe Biden, and I suspect designed by the Biden campaign with that in mind. President Trump responded for the first time, saying that he did take full responsibility for how the United States had responded to COVID-19, but again saying, it's not my fault, it's not Joe Biden's fault, it's the fault of China. So we got China introduced to the debate very early on, and he insisted in the debate, as he has again today on the campaign trail, that COVID-19 is just simply going to go away and that the country is rounding the corner in its battle against the pandemic, even though that is not what public health experts believe. I mean, the other aspect of the debate in international terms and of particular interest to us, of course, is the sense that the United States now faces a very stark choice between two competing foreign policy visions. The vision of President Trump, and he went into great detail about his view that had he not been president of the United States, America would by now be at war with North Korea. It would have cost millions of lives. He is absolutely sure that his outreach to Kim Jong-un has been worth it, even if it hasn't led to much progress specifically in terms of nuclear disarmament. And Joe Biden, who was making it clear that, as he described them, thugs like Kim Jong-un, Xi Jinping in China, Vladimir Putin in Russia, need to be on notice that if he is president of the United States, America will no longer turn a blind eye to many of their excesses. Now, of course, the Trump administration and President Trump's team would argue that, particularly when it comes to China, the U.S. has turned a corner and turned a page, changing dramatically the nature of the U.S. relationship with China. And it was almost unstated in what Joe Biden had to say last night that he accepts that those changes are a bit of a fait accompli and China should not expect everything suddenly to revert to the way things were 4 years ago if indeed he becomes president next January. But definitely we were hearing a very distinct choice on foreign policy both stylistically and also in policy terms, from these two men in the national security portion of the debate. Impacted though that portion of the debate was by President Trump's desire to talk extensively about Joe Biden's alleged, you know, unsubstantiated claims of corruption that he and his son Hunter Biden may or may not have been engaged in China. President Trump very eager to talk about that throughout the debate and to try and get Joe Biden to engage on the subject, and that clearly is not an issue that Joe Biden believes is worthy of discussion, because he argued that the president was simply spreading Russian disinformation, even by talking about those claims that were published last week in the New York Post, and that, as I say, have still not been verified by any other news organization.
Simon, let's go now back to the campaign trail. The 10 days to go, I believe, and give us a snapshot of what we can expect, because President Trump back in Florida, Joe Biden staying in Delaware, and almost 50 million voters have already cast their vote.
Yes, and Donald Trump will become one of them tomorrow. He's just told a crowd in Florida. He says that he plans to vote while he is there this weekend, which is not something that we had previously known. I think we'd understood that he'd applied for a postal ballot and was going to vote in absentia. Remember that he's officially registered now as a resident of Florida. He formerly moved to the Sunshine State from New York, I think a couple of years ago now. So that's where he gets to vote, and he says if necessary he's going to queue up for 2 hours to vote tomorrow. I've got a sneaking suspicion it might not be necessary for him to do that. Mike Pence and his wife Karen became early voters. They participated this week as well, joining this tide of 50 million Americans who have already cast their ballots. And I really think, you know, it requires us to rethink in many ways the manner in which we talk about the US election and election day. We talk a lot about, you know, we're into the final week of the campaign and Americans will be casting their ballots on November the 3rd. Time is running out for the candidates to make their pitches. I mean, the reality is for, as of yesterday, 48 million Americans, that second presidential debate was completely irrelevant because they'd already cast their votes. They can't change their minds now, even if they wanted to. And, you know, I think going forward, this is not simply a facet of COVID-19. Early voting now here is absolutely enshrined in the American psyche. And so it's going to change the nature of campaigning, because it means candidates have to get their messaging across much earlier than they traditionally have done in the past. I think for Donald Trump, that is a problem in the sense that the Donald Trump that we witnessed at that final debate on Thursday night was markedly different, much more focused, much more disciplined than the Donald Trump that we had previously seen on the campaign trail. And all of those 50 million voters who have already cast their ballots, they didn't get to see the focused and disciplined Donald Trump who was on display in Nashville on Thursday night. And that may end up costing him dear when the votes are counted. But what we're going to witness in the final full week of this election before polling closes on what we have previously described as election day is these candidates now barnstorming the battleground states, the swing states where these the outcome of this race will eventually be decided. It's going to be non-stop appearances by them and by their surrogates, including, of course, former President Barack Obama, who returned to the campaign trail this week publicly for the first time at a Biden rally in Philadelphia, and of course prominent supporters of the president who will also be out on the road. So it's going to be non-stop as they try to make the case for every single vote that they can turn out, and they try to woo what have to be at this point, you know, a handful of undecided floating voters. I mean, it's hard to imagine anyone at this stage has not heard enough to make a decision, but maybe there's a few of them still out there.
You're listening to Asia First Weekend Edition with me, Justine Most. I'm speaking with Simon Marks, our US Bureau Chief in Washington, D.C. Simon, just before we get on to the announcement about Sudan-Israel relations, let's just quickly touch on those coronavirus cases, which you mentioned earlier, rising, of course. And I think Thursday had a record tally.
Yeah, I mean, very difficult for President Trump, who at the debate and again in Florida today insisted that the country is rounding the corner. COVID-19 will simply go away. There'll be a vaccine, but we don't really have to worry about that because it's just going to go away, as he said within the last few hours. You know, the evidence suggests that's not the case. 77,640 new cases of infection in the United States on Thursday, debate day itself. That is a new 24-hour record for the United States and adds to this notion that the country is beginning to see a second wave, the second wave that public health officials always warned would come in the autumn as colder weather set in. And so, you know, as an election issue, those numbers, if they continue ticking up over the next 10 days, will, I think, only underscore the importance that those people who have not yet participated in the election will attach to COVID-19 and the state of the economy as an issue. And again, in the debate, starkly differing visions of what to do. Joe Biden arguing there has to be a national plan. Money has to be provided to schools and businesses, you know, so restaurants can go and buy plexiglass screens to separate patrons, and educational facilities can have adequate ventilation systems to try and protect people from catching this airborne virus. Whereas Donald Trump continues to argue it's up to each of America's individual states to decide what to do, because he says the pattern of infection all over the country wildly varies depending on where you find yourself. But as an issue, it's absolutely apparent that this isn't going away. And public health officials do not agree with the president's claim that the country is rounding the corner and putting the pandemic behind it.
Simon, let's go to some foreign policy, foreign news now out of the US. Sudan to normalize relations with Israel, so says President Donald Trump.
Yeah, this was a big deal. The president surprising the White House press corps, who were suddenly told to assemble. They didn't know why, and head into the Oval Office, where they discovered President Trump, flanked by many of his top advisers, on a speakerphone with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and the Prime Minister of Sudan. And suddenly it became apparent that rumors that had been in the wind of the possibility of Sudan agreeing to normalize relations with Israel were a reality. This was a sort of a two-step process that took place over a matter of minutes. The first thing we learned was that the United States was going to remove Sudan from its list of states that sponsor terrorism. That means that the country will be alleviated from a variety of sanctions that are imposed on countries that are officially considered state sponsors of terrorism by the United States. And then seconds later, this news that they were going ahead with the recognition of Israel. You know, this comes after President Trump has overseen the normalization agreements between Israel and Dubai. Israel and the United Arab Emirates. Previous agreements that have been outlined by the White House. And the president says that he hopes that there will be more in the pipeline. He continues to hint at the possibility of Saudi Arabia eventually normalizing relations with Israel, which would obviously be an enormous coup were he able to bring it off. Not clear that he's going to be able to bring it off this side of America's election ending. There was one moment where in the Oval Office, President Trump said to Prime Minister Netanyahu, "Can you imagine Sleepy Joe Biden making this happen? He would never have made this happen. It could only have been me that would make this happen, don't you think? There's no way Sleepy Joe could have done this." And Benjamin Netanyahu, very aware that there might be a political change in Washington just down the road, said, "Well, Mr. President, we value anyone who makes a contribution to peace in the region." So he was very much hedging his bets in answering that question.
Lovely and diplomatic. Simon, just finally, just a bit closer to us in this part of the world, US Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is flying to India next week to strengthen ties, of course, but also perhaps to bolster another ally against China.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's going to have short term a little bit of explaining to do after President Trump described India during the course of the debate last night as filthy. He was talking, of course, about the country's air pollution in the climate change section of the debate. But it was notable that he dismissed both India and China as filthy. And it's not entirely clear that the Indians were terribly thrilled about that description of their country. But look, the relationship between Narendra Modi and Donald Trump has been warm and very productive. Obviously, there has been this flare up in the border dispute between India and China. And this is an opportunity for the Secretary of State face to face with Indian officials to engage on that particular issue and to discuss more broadly regional concerns about Chinese expansionism, particularly, of course, in the South China Sea, but also in terms of border relationships that China has with countries like India. So a real opportunity to build on the progress that has already been made between Washington and Delhi, and a chance to try and cement things again just in case Donald Trump loses this election and Joe Biden takes over at the end of January. We're definitely into a period here where the Trump administration's senior figures are plainly very aware that this is an election that may not, for them, have a positive outcome. And in foreign policy terms and in domestic policy terms, they are trying to get as much nailed down as they possibly can, as quickly as they can, just in case, once November the 4th or 5th roll around, we all discover that they only have a few weeks left in office.
Simon, thank you so much for speaking to us here in Singapore. As always, we always look forward to your comments out of Washington, D.C., and you have a great day.
Thanks, Justine. Talk tomorrow.